Good morning. This is Alicia Bales. It's Wednesday, September 25th at 11.05 a.m., what has been for the last 20 years the time slot for Jeffrey Blankford and his show Takes on the World, alternating every other Wednesday with Joy LeClaire and Forthright Radio. But last month, Jeffrey announced his retirement, and 2 weeks ago was his last program. You can still listen to Takes on the World. His entire archive is available on the web at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, number four, all.net. But for now, as I work to develop a new program to replace Takes on the World in this time slot, we're going to feature local voices and special programs. And you may have heard a series of call-in programs that we were doing with the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors. And I thought I'd continue to bring voices of local elected leaders to the airwaves. So I've invited Michael Hunter to talk about tribal government here in Mendocino County. We're very fortunate to have in the studio Michael Hunter, who's the tribal chairman of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians and the tribal chairman of the United Pomo Nations Council that consists of 16 Pomo tribes in Lake, Mendocino, and Sonoma. Thanks for coming into Philo, Michael, and welcome to KZYX.
Happy to be here.
It's great to have you here. And you are, Coyote Valley is one of many sovereign tribal governments in Mendocino County. Can you start by introducing us to this idea of tribal governments and sovereignty?
Yeah, we have 23 Pomo tribes in Lake, Sonoma, and Mendocino County alone. We have more tribes in these three counties than we do in any other counties and in California. Many of us have gaming. Most of us don't. You know, so it's kind of a mixed bag of situations for each tribe.
And each tribe is a sovereign nation?
Correct. Yeah. So we're all federally recognized tribes in Mendo and Lake and Sonoma.
Does that make you equal in status to like the state of California, or how does that work?
Yeah, so basically we are a California within California. So we abide by the federal laws just like the state of California would, and we make our laws a little more stringent if needed, just like the state of California does as well with their legislature.
And so for Coyote Valley, where is your tribal land? Like, where's your state of California?
Right. We're in Redwood Valley, California, right off of 101. You can see our fuel station and our C-store there, and we also built a new casino that should be open in a couple weeks, and our hotel in March. So.
Oh, and I want to ask you about all of that, the new projects and the gas station, the new casino, and I didn't realize it was opening in just a couple of weeks.
Right.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about that, but I kind of want to get a little background for how the tribal government even works, and how you said there are 23 sovereign tribal governments here in Mendo, Lake, and Sonoma County.
Right.
So how do you guys, how many people do you represent, and how do you coordinate with each other?
So Coyote Valley consists of approximately 400 tribal members, you know, half adult and half children. And we have a reservation of about, we started out 54 acres. I think we're up to like 76 or 80 or so right now. We have seven council persons. You have a tribal chairperson, who is myself, and then you have a vice chair, and then you have a secretary, treasurer, and then you have a historian and two officers. So that's how our government is set up. We have our own constitution that the tribal members approve, and if we need any changes, we go out to the membership for amendments as well. And we have elections every 4 years. They're staggered, so it's two per term.
Uh-huh. And what's an election like? Is it a big deal?
Depends who's running. Seems like if the chairman's running, sure seems to be like a big deal.
And do you have debates? And I mean, you've got 400 people who can vote, right? Or
yeah.
not that many, because some are
18
kids.
And over, yeah. Uh-huh. So half, it's usually half. And sometimes that makes it hard when it's a smaller voting population, because there's less room for error, you know, so you really have to be transparent and be involved and make sure that people know what you're doing as well. But each tribe is different, but I'm pretty positive that most tribes in Pomo country consist of seven elected council members and pretty much operate on a constitution that they approved for their own membership.
And as a sovereign government, do you have your own kind of electoral office that runs the elections? Like the Mendocino County has their office of, you know, the elections office there.
Yeah, we have an election committee that does all of our elections along with our tribal chief.
And it could be one or two votes that could sway the election, huh?
Oh, it's been like that many times, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty, you know, they say that tribes could be unstable, but And sometimes elections could create that, you know. But in our case, elections actually create stability, and the fact that we know we're going to have them when we're supposed to have them really helps, you know, investors, really helps the community know where we're at, and it really helps the locals know who to talk to. So I think we do a pretty good job. I think most tribes do for the most part.
And how long have you been the tribal chairman out at Coyote Valley?
So I'm in my 7th year, so my 2nd term, and I have another election at the end of next year.
Uh-huh. Are you nervous about it?
I work hard for my people, and I'm pretty content. And I know by the end of next year we'll be pretty self-reliant as far as economics concerned. And so if I wasn't to win my election, I think I did it the right way. And I think I'd be okay with going and living my other life as well. It's stressful.
That's every elected official that I've talked to has said that too. Like, it's good. It's good to be part of the local government. It's good to serve. But I wouldn't mind having my old life back, you know?
Right, right. It's a little different for Indian country, because the people that vote for you are your uncles, aunts, your first cousins, and the decisions you have to make are more than just what a board of supervisors, if you will, would make. We really do deal with a lot of not just economic development, but we deal with, you know, CPS issues. We deal with a lot of the issues that plague many poor areas, if you will, but you know, particularly Indian country. So it's a little bit different. It's hard to lead on the economic development side and become self-reliant at the same time, deal with the hidden issues that people are not proud of, obviously, right? But you got to deal with them. So it's really hard to have a good balance, and I think that's probably the hardest. That's probably the difference between a tribal council leader and another elected person.
That it's some hybrid between government and family.
Oh, man, and sometimes it's 70-30 one way, 70-30 the other. It's really it's difficult. But you maneuver, you figure it out.
And how do you interact or coordinate with the other tribes who are also sovereign governments?
Yeah, we're all, you know, a lot of us are related. We have, you know, a cousin went over to another reservation and met some beautiful lady or a beautiful man and got together. And as soon as you know, we have members that live on other reservations. So it's, we're intertwined. We call it like, you know, we're basket people, you know. So we say, you know, we're like a big basket. We're all intertwined one way or the other, you know. And non-Indians try to play that off as if we're all incest and this, and it's just not so true. It's like so crazy when I hear that stuff, because they think all Indians must be related or something, you know. So like if an Indian comes up and they know an Indian, do you know him? Man, I mean, I don't even know what state that guy's from, you know, but it's fun.
You said, so you are the tribal chairman of the United Pomo Nations Council.
Yeah, we back in the day, my mother, Mike Knight, who's one of my mentors, he used to be the chairman for Sherwood, and a couple others used to have a Mendocino Pomo Council, and they would get together and talk about their issues. And I wanted to make that more official, so a group of us got together, tribal leaders got together, created a nonprofit, and 16 tribes signed up by resolution, not just say yes, we'll be involved, but had approved at the council, signed up by resolution. So we all belong to United Pomo Nations Council, and I'm the chair of that. So you know, I always try to make sure that when I'm out in the communities that I'm not just representing myself and my family, but I'm representing my tribe, but I'm also representing 16 other Pomo tribes when I speak. So be careful, be thoughtful, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's not an actual governmental organization.
No.
It's not like a nation with a constitution the way that your individual
tribes are. Right. We're all independently sovereign nations that got together and created a nonprofit to communicate, but also to have a forum for non-Indians and other, you know, county departments to be able to come and meet with us all at one time, so you don't have to go find each tribal leader in each area.
So how does that work? What kinds of issues do you are you dealing with in terms of the Pomo Nations as you're coordinating through the council, but also as you have to interact with the county government.
Right. We use the forum more for information, but when it comes to the county and the state, but we have our own internal issues that we deal with as well. So those probably, the internal ones, seem to be more insightful, more thoughtful, and more caring, and trying to figure out how we move forward as a nation, you know, and, you know, how do we address some issues that are happening in our communities together. But when it comes to the counties, it's more for them to come speak their minds, say what they have to say, and we'll go back to our own councils and decide what we want to do as individual tribes for that part.
And is it, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then when it comes to the state, we really, because we came together, we have a bigger voice, you know. So if you have 16 tribes on a letterhead and you write a letter to your senator or your assembly person, sometimes you get a response. Most of the time you don't. Depends on who the representatives are.
But, and so what kinds of things might you write a letter to the representatives about?
So there's legislation that deals with tribes. You have the low-income housing tax credits. You have, we try to get in to make sure we can write the rules that apply to us. You have legislation that affects us when it comes to water, when it comes to, you know, other things that we share with the county, you know. So sometimes we're on the same page as the county. Sometimes we're not. Sometimes we have to fight for what's ours, and they have to fight for what's theirs, and we see who, you know, legislation decides that outcome.
Do you have lobbyists and things in Sacramento?
Many tribes do. Some of their tribes do. I don't. I do it myself.
Oh, you go there.
Yeah, I prefer to speak for behalf of my tribe at all times, to be honest.
So let's talk a little bit about the history, the recent history of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo, because it's fascinating, and I don't think that people are aware of it necessarily, and how it might affect the way that the tribe interacts locally with the local government structure. So the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo, were not always in Redwood Valley. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, yeah. You know, I just gave the speech when we did the ribbon cutting for our casino for our membership, so they could be the first to see what we've done. And in the speech, I tried to continue to educate our members, but also surrounding community that the Board of Supervisors in Mendocino County, the Board of Supervisors of Sonoma, and others got together with the Corps of Engineers. They decided they needed more water than Coyote Valley needed land, and that's how you have Lake Mendocino. Now, this is in 1956, so this is my great-grandmother lived there and raised my mother there and many of my cousins. And 20 years later, they won a court case called Eddie Knight versus United States, Northern District of California, and we won. And in 79, we got a grant to buy the land that we live on now, which is off of 101 in Redwood Valley. Those, you know, I remember moving to that reservation with my great grandmother and my mother and other cousins, and we lived in one big trailer. And in the daytime, it was our tribal offices, and at nighttime, it was our home. And I remember we would get always in trouble because we thought it was our home 24/7, and it, and half, you know, the office, you know, the staff, they'd always give us heck, but we never understood. You know, but we'd roll up our sleeping bags and, you know, put in closets, and then it became an office. And then at night we'd put the desk away and, you know, lay our beds down and those kind of things. But I didn't look at those as sad or bad or any other than I got to be with my family, and I got to live on a land that had two rivers on each side and an orchard. And so, I mean, I had a blast. Now, my mother and my cousins and my our elders, they didn't. It's a little bit different when you're a full adult and you're raising children and, you know, you have one shower amongst everybody and everybody's sharing it. Hot water runs out. You know, you have three in there, you know, showering at the same time, which we thought was fun. Parents probably didn't, you know. So we were very limited, but we didn't know we were limited. But I was at that age where I was able to see that it was all dirt roads and one trailer, you know. So I've got to see, you know, my mother and my uncles and my aunts. I just love talking about them because it's not every day you get to share their legacy, you know. And there was just dirt roads. And now there's paved roads, there's water, there's waste, you know, system, there's housing, they had a government building.
There's a swimming pool.
We have a swimming pool, center. New education center. You know, so we've come so far, and I was lucky to be a part of that. So I was able to imitate that and continue their legacy.
Well, and just the resilience that even just this summary of the story, you can hear that you guys went through a terrible experience and hardship. But let's go back. First, let me reintroduce you. My guest is Michael Hunter. He's the tribal chairman of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians and the tribal chairman of the United Pomo Nations Council. I'm Alicia Bales. We are going to open the phone lines in about 10 or 15 minutes for your calls. But I want to go back to 1956 and the Army Corps of Engineers and Mendocino County and Sonoma County. Coyote Valley Band of Pomo were already living in Coyote Valley. Was there a rancheria or a reservation there at the time?
They lived on Lake Mendocino. It was the Russian River, I believe, right? Uh-huh. That runs through there. So what better way to dam and create water for new residents other than us, right? You know. But yeah, they lived there. I mean, we had homes.
I heard a couple years ago when the drought was really bad and the water receded, the foundations were revealed.
We were more on the hillside,
okay.
So you had a couple areas, but it was beautiful to be. I know that nobody wants a drought, but we took a lot of ourselves over there. We took our kids over there and walked those areas to show them that this was your land. It's funny. Well, I don't know, funny, but we laugh. Indian humor, we call it. It's how you get over the hardships, I guess. But they condemned our land, said it was unlivable. That was their reasoning. You know, we know they wanted to build a lake, but now you see homes around there. Not so condemned anymore, right? Now it's lakefront property, and it's just so so ironic to hear those things, you know, and then go out there and see the other houses that are huge out there. I'm like, wow,
right, mansions.
Man, yeah, you know, tax dollars paid for waterfront property and took my people off their reservation, you know.
And you were actually delisted, right?
Whatever that means. We were terminated as a tribe.
Terminated.
So they didn't just remove us from our lands. They said, you are no longer Indian. And a few people found that out by going to college and getting a BIA loans or BIA grants for education. And they were denied like halfway through college, right? So they said, what? We're not even Indian anymore either? And
they said,
no, you don't qualify. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of tribes found out that way, and that's why you have that era of leadership coming back and challenging in the courts.
So there were many tribes that were terminated
many.
At that time?
It's a termination era. It's like if you Google termination era California, California's has the highest termination era ever because the land's valuable. You go to other parts of the states where the land's not so valuable, but you come to California, the land's valuable. You had the gold rush, you know. You've also had, you know, you have wineries, right? They wanted masses of land so they could build these vineyards, you know? So it was wanted out here, agriculture, everything.
Mm-hmm. And so from 1956 to 1979, Coyote Valley, Pomo had no place to be?
It didn't exist anymore. Yeah. The families split off. My Campbell side of the reservation, my great grandmother and great grandpa, they led the families, and it's pretty much what they said pretty much went. And then they had the two boys, Uncle Ira Campbell and Uncle Hiram Campbell, and they worked at the mill. So their job was bought this property up on a hill in Redwood Valley, and so they lived in a shack with my mother and the other kids. And you know, great grandma's always raising everybody's kids, seems like. And they would all live in a shack, and they built a house cinder block by cinder block after working at the mill all day. And they do one home by one, well, one room by one room until they got enough, you know, to build enough room for the rest of their family to be in that one house. Yeah, crazy. They're pretty awesome. They actually, you know, they supported the Campbell side. You know, they are the true fathers of our reservation, and a lot of us younger generation don't know that because you just weren't taught it. It just is what it is, and that's just the way it was.
Just survived it.
Yeah, well, I guess we had fun. Remember, I had two rivers.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, they had the hardships, I guess, you know.
They were just holding everything together.
I didn't know what being poor was.
Wow.
I really had no clue what being poor was. I lived in a little trailer till I was probably eighth grade. I don't even remember. I remember There's a few of us lived in. We had one more home. It took forever, you know. Then we got some new homes, and then seventh grade is when we finally got homes. So it was a while.
Seventh grade. Yeah. Wow. And otherwise, you were living in the trailer that stood in for the tribal government office.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that nuts, right? I mean, you. I remember Jean Hunt. She was our CFO, and she was a great woman. She was a non-Indian, but she was a great woman, and she was the one always giving me heck because that was my room. So I always remember her saying, "Get your bags out of here," and well, you know. So my mom would come in and say, "Yeah, you got to get it out. I told you to get up earlier," you know. But those were our hardships, you know, I guess. But when you're poor, you don't even know what it's like. So, you know, we ate good. We played. We had the river. What do you want? Yeah.
Well, we are. I mean, even poor in Mendocino County is surrounded by the rivers and the.
Right.
I mean, it's just we're so fortunate.
Oh, we're so rich in everything else that people sometimes we focus too much on being on the poorness of being poor. You know, when everything else is just so rich and you don't have to have so much to live so great here in Mendocino County. But you know, I mean, you got to learn. You know, I was lucky to learn at a young age of what being poor, but being rich in culture and rich in resources really was, you know, so different perspective.
Your kids are not growing up like that.
No.
How are things different for your kids?
Oh, man, I got daughters and a niece, you know, and it's me and my father, the only male in our family, and now I have a great nephew. Good luck to him. Man, you know, our reservation was led by women, so many of our chairpersons were women, you know, including my mother, and strong women, and so it's not easy being the only male, you know, but I was, and I worked hard, so I learned how to work very, very hard, and my father had his own company for a very long time, so while everybody else was playing sports and having fun, I played sports and went to work at night, you know. But I learned that I wanted to live a better lifestyle, you know. And I also, when I had my children, I bought my home when I was 21, and I said my children will always have their own home, you know. So that was always my goal, is to make sure they always had their own home. So whatever else fails in their life, they'll always have a place to go to. So that was my number one goal. So, but they seem to live pretty good. Yeah, they're having a good time, I think.
How old are they?
We have my oldest. Is I'm going to get in trouble for this. My oldest, I want to say, is 23, 24, maybe 25. I don't know. She's older. We have two grandbabies who are amazing. And we have, my youngest is Michaela. She's 21. And then my niece is, I want to say 22, 23. But they're all in that age, you know.
Young
and
it's women.
Just that, yeah, they're, and they're pretty strong. Well, they're raised with their grandmother, you know, Priscilla, so my mom. So they're pretty strong-minded, too. So.
And are they all in Coyote Valley?
No, but we're building a new residential. We have, I think, 29 new homes coming up. We've opened 9 of them up for our elders and special assistants, because those are the most important to make sure we take care of. We have another 20 or 19 being open for the rest of the families. So hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have my daughters will be living there, but a lot of our other cousins and stuff. So we're building a community.
Yeah, let's talk about that. That transformation, because back in 1979, when you're living in the trailer with the whole family and it's doubling as the tribal office, that is not the situation out at Coyote Valley now. You've got these, you've built, like you said, cinder block by cinder block. You've had to figure out how to create the infrastructure out there, and you've got visionary projects for housing the people and for alternative energy and even for cultural development. Can you tell
Sure.
us that story?
You know,
how did you do it?
So the irony about of all of this is, no matter what you do when it comes to infrastructure, you need water. Now, our reservation is Lake Mendocino, but we had a cap on water. So we had 30 homes built out there, and the water district wouldn't allow us to build any new homes. So that was ironic, right? So when I became chairman, I watched and listened to how my elders did it, my mother and her cousins did it. So I had a good idea. And so when I came to work for my tribe as chairman, I knew the first thing I had to do was bring more water. And it's just because I knew that cap existed for so long. So the first thing we did was focus on water. We built our own well. We had a few, we tried a few wells that didn't work, and they have a lot of you know, I don't even know what they have in them. So the water wasn't clean enough. And then our last shot, we found some good water. So we struck oil, we say, you know, but it was water. And that opened the doors for us. That opened everything for us to be able to do what we've done. So after that, we wanted to make sure that our waste system was a leach line back then, and it was failing. It was coming up out of the ground, you know, for many years coming up out of the ground. And so the two things that we said we're going to focus on in my first term was infrastructure. So we focused on water and waste. We just really focused on water and waste. And that's where we're at now. So now we could build homes. We could do what we want. Now with our casino, we'll have some more economic dollars coming too, and our hotel. But we're really proud, and people don't know this, but we're really proud because we have a state-of-the-art water and waste filtration system. And so where we'll have all of our homes, every business that we have there, all run through and be clean. So all of our water that we'll use for, whether we might get into other business as well, but for otherwise, for your toilets, for mm-hmm. the hotels, you have landscape, you know. So we wanted to make sure we did it responsibly, and we spent a lot of extra money into that. That's probably one of our most proudest, but it's not as sexy, so people really don't ask us those questions. Yeah, you know, I mean,
so Michael,
you have to do it responsibly, right, you know.
Yeah, but that's the basis of every plan that you have.
Everything.
The infrastructure and doing the infrastructure right. It is ironic that you were capped. You couldn't get enough water to develop or to build anything for the people out there. But now that you've solved that problem, you've got these exciting projects. You said the hotel and the casino open in a few weeks.
Yeah, the casino opens in a couple of weeks, pending a few inspections. And then the hotel, we're shooting for March, maybe earlier. Yeah.
I was at a presentation for the Latinx Alliance, mm-hmm. and it was the state of the Latino community. There's a statistician there who gave a talk about, you know, just the numbers around everything, employment and education for the different ethnicities and races in the county. And she said that the tribes are very soon going to be the largest employer in the county.
Yeah, I believe if you combine the tribes, we're the largest employee in each county. But if you separate it to casino or, you know, businesses like that,
or the health
I believe
center.
We're third. Uh-huh. I think Coyote Valley alone is third. But if you combine us, I think we're number one. But Coyote Valley, I think we're third or coming in the third.
The third largest employer in the county.
Yeah.
So you're a player. You're to be reckoned with as an economic force in the county.
Well, I don't know. You know, to be honest with you, I don't know. What I've noticed more so is outside the reservation boundaries, they focus on regulating you, and they don't do it in a bad way. There's no ill intentions. It's just that's what all the county knows is how to, you bring an idea to the table, they pick it apart until you find some sort of common ground, right? I think that mindset hurts the growth, to be honest with you, you know, but it didn't hurt ours. You know, so I'm thankful for what they allowed us to do and what we've able to come together on and some memorandum of understandings. But, yeah, I think for us, my whole goal, and I said this at the beginning, is to be self-reliant. And that doesn't just mean economic development. That means our homes. But more importantly, it means our water. It means our waste. And now we're looking to a solar program. By the end of this year, we'll do a whole solar farm to where it's going to be cut 40% of our electricity as well. So we're at 43, to be honest. But those are the key things that we're really focusing on. You know, after what I've experienced, my mother experienced, my great-grandmother and my aunts and uncles, and I told myself when I do this, my tribe will never be at risk again. You know, so our goal is to be self-reliant, and we want to get to that point to where the county needs us more than we need them. And I think once the county starts to realize that we're a good team, we're a good player. We've, I was raised here. I went to, you know, Frank Sieg, Oak Manor, Redwood Valley when it was Redwood Valley Middle School. I went to Ukiah High School, went to Mendocino College, you know, so played basketball there, you know. So I'm a community member. It's just sometimes I'm not looked at as a community member. And if you see some of the postings and articles, some of the locals sure seem to think that I could be the devil at some times, which is different.
Really?
Well, we are the first tribe to file an opioid lawsuit in the United States, I believe. Maybe second in the United States, but California for sure. And we were excited about that. You know, we wanted to take the lead for Indian country. So we filed. We got I think there were like another 50 tribes joined later on throughout the year, and we didn't understand why the state wasn't filing yet, but they did later. We didn't understand why the counties weren't going after it, but we were a little bit ahead of the game. You know, we're a little more progressive than most, and when we filed that, there was an article, and we were so proud of that because it's the opioids, you know, it's like Big Pharma. Who loves Big Pharma? Oh my God, 90% of the postings were against the tribe. Unbelievable. When are they going to sue for, they have a casino, they should sue for that. They have a gas station, they should sue for that. You know, all these things. And I'm just like, wow, you guys actually dislike Indians more than you dislike Big Pharma? I never heard of such a thing. And when I read those posts, it was heartbreaking, but it is what it is.
Well, Indians flexing power. Do you think they were threatened by that? Or why do you think they reacted that way?
You know, you could flex power. And it's important to flex power, but it's important for people to be behind you when you flex that power. So Big Pharma, that lawsuit for me, I thought for sure everybody would be behind mm-hmm. us for that one, to carry that, to take that lead. And when I found out that I read some of those postings that many weren't even behind you on that, is when I realized that, man, maybe Coyote Valley may stand a little bit, you know, an Indian country stands a little bit alone more than we even thought. And that was sad for us. But you know, I mean, we heal. We're healing. We're still healing. And we're open-minded. But eventually, I think, for the betterment of the county, eventually they got to come around, you know. And I really want to focus on the nonprofits, not the big nonprofits nationally, but I want to focus on Mendocino County nonprofits to help our communities. And I was just at a Mexican event, and there's a bunch of friends and old high school buddies. And I realized that I don't fund any of their nonprofits. And I was really set back. And they didn't ask. No, they weren't even thinking about it. They're just having a good time. And I realized, damn, we look the same. And you don't even know to come to my table to see if we could help your community. And I was a little bit disappointed in myself. But I learned, you know. And so now I'll do a better job and make sure that I find out who their leaders are in their community, you know.
You're going to start getting grant proposals now.
We'll put something together, you know. We have to phone, once we finish our hotel, you know, and we finish paying off our debt, I'm looking at 2021 probably, to where we'll play a bigger role in the community, but it'll be grassroots. We won't go through, it won't be from the top down. It'll be from the bottom up for sure. But one thing I gotta say for our tribe is, as we started to grow, we were the first tribe to do a $12 minimum wage. And when I was at the inaugural for Obama, you know, and I just fell in love with this guy. I got an Obama crush, I'm not gonna lie. And then I heard his speech for State of the Union speech, and it talked about giving America a raise. And I said, well, the least I could do is give our employees and my people a raise, right? So I went back and implemented that immediately. And that's before we started building our new stuff. So we have a lot of investment we still have to take care of, but we knew that we had to do that for our people first. And we just did a $15 an hour. We call it $15 an hour. It's not a minimum wage, if you will, but you can't make less than $15 an hour because you have tips and those kind of things in play. But we make sure that nobody makes less than $15 an hour. And I wanted to make sure because, you know, we were poor, you know, and we were the real workers of the community, you know. So I want to make sure that the real hard workers get their share, you know.
All right, my guest is Michael Hunter. He's the tribal chairman of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians. My name is Alicia Bales. We're live on KZYX, and we can open the lines to take your calls. The number in the studio is 895-2448. That's 895-2448. Feel free to call in if you have any questions for Michael Hunter or any of the things that we've been discussing. I'm so curious about this $15 an hour minimum, quote-unquote minimum wage, out at Coyote Valley. So does that mean that all the new jobs for the hotel and the big new casino are going to be $15 an hour jobs?
Right. We retroed it too, you know. So all the employees that we bumped them all up to that, you know. And then so all the new employees we bring in will start at 15. Yeah, well, that doesn't matter to us for entry level. I mean, you got to live. You know, The one thing I've learned, well, when you're poor, you learn how to live poor, right? But you also learn how to get a little ahead, you know. And sometimes you just need that helping hand, and it's our responsibility to make sure that everybody that works for us is able to at least feed their family, take care of them as much as they can, you know, and we need to do our part.
How many jobs will be in the next couple of weeks when the casino opens?
Man, we're at just casino alone, I think at 200, and I think, in government, we're at 50, and then I think we're doing another 50, so we'll be over 300 in March. Yeah, 300 plus. Oh, and then we have the C-Store, so we'll about, be about 320 in March. Yeah.
What, you have the what store?
We have our convenience store, and then we have the fuel store. Station.
Okay,
yeah.
right.
And the a mini gas casino station. To that. Yeah.
Are you putting a mini casino in the gas
station? We have
station?
It. It's there. It's the first non-smoking one that's real 100% non-smoking by itself, so you don't have to go through the smoking section to get to the non-smoking. So, you know.
And the casino, you're building a new casino. It's opening in a couple of weeks, but you've had a casino out at Coyote Valley for years and years now. When did that casino first open?
Jeez, I want to say that opened in 95, because I know we compacted in 99 with the state. And then, I would say since 95. I think I graduated high school, and I was playing basketball when I was working there, so I had to be in 95.
Okay, so we have a call before I ask my next question. Hi, caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, this is Sally from Little River.
Hey, Sally.
I just wanted to thank you so much for this show. It was so refreshing to hear the Indian voice. And I'm just proud of you guys. So thank you both.
I'm happy to be on. I was a little nervous, to be honest.
Well, and I'm not as familiar with tribal government as I am. I'm not super familiar with even county government, so it's a learning curve. But tribal government, I have almost no understanding about how it works. So I really am grateful for you for coming on and being willing to kind of explain it and orient.
Yeah, us my to it. My friend, he's a Mark. He's a good guy. He's one of the. I'll throw a plug for him. So he's one of the car salesmen. What's the one down by Costco? I forget which one that is.
Thurston?
No, not Thurston's. The other one. Fowler? Oh. So anyway, I'll throw a little plug in for these guys. So he comes in and he says, "Hey, Michael, how you doing? Can you sign this?" And he's talking like that because we, you know, played basketball together. And a couple of people were offended and they pulled him aside and said, "Hey, that's our chairman. You know, you don't just go to the governor and you talk to them and say, hey, start talking first name." And afterwards he comes and he says, "Man, I didn't realize I wanted to apologize," you know. And we laughed about it, you know, a little bit. But at the same time, I'm getting used to, it's hard, you know, it's hard to get used to being called chairman, you know, and those kind of things. But I think if we don't and our community don't recognize the positions that are in tribal government, then they'll never have that power, you know, of when you sit down with other people or the county or cities, you know, or they'll think we're less of, and it's important for them to understand that we are our own government, you know, and a lot of people forget that.
Uh-huh, and that you interact with them as equals, right?
You know, if you bring your governor, the state of California, to our table, we're equals. If you bring a board of supervisors to our table, we will work out MOUs, we will work out deals, we'll do those things. But sometimes, and I'm not trying to, you know, be arrogant, I think it's important for people to understand that we are governors of our own tribal sovereignty reservation of our government.
So not quite equals.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll play the role.
That's good to keep in mind when you're talking about equality. Like, actually, our status is higher than the county government.
Yeah, we are California, inside California.
But did they, when they're negotiating or interacting with you, are they mindful of that?
I think they understand that we have a government-to-government relationship. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's still people sitting at a table working out deals and, you know, and so I think the titles go aside for the most part at that point. But, for the most part, they realize they're talking to a government, and sometimes you have to flex your legal power for them to understand that you're just not building something somewhere in Ukiah, that you have a whole different, you know, relationship. Mm-hmm. But it's all learning. It's all learning. You know, we have a good relationship with the Board of Supervisors. We have a good relationship with the sheriff, you know. So we work hard on it. They work hard on it.
All right. We have another call. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Morning. Thanks for taking my call. And I think this is kind of along the line that you're talking about right now as far as the responsibility of the tribe. As the traffic increases in the area, I'm just wondering, how far out do you feel the responsibility of the tribe goes? Should you be involved with some of the traffic mitigation, especially at the Redwood Valley exit area, is question number one. Question number two is, is there any bus stops or public transit stops planned for the hotel parking area? Thank you.
Yeah, I think you're referring to West Road. It's getting, I think we have some responsibility there, you know. I think the first responsibility first, though, is probably our initial exit, which is on the frontage road of 101, for people turning in and out. And then possibly down the road for that West Road. I know it's getting busy. I think we have to partner up with other businesses. You have the lumber mill down the road, right? It can't just be always Coyote Valley having off-reservation impacts, right? There's other businesses that have these impacts. So you have the lumber mill down the road who has the big diesels coming flying in and out, you know, and people think because they're a non-Indian business that they don't have any responsibilities as well, right? And I think we have to come together as a community to figure out that, because you also have the vineyard right above us too, who has a lot of employees coming out. And you know, but I think we have, once we do open the casino hotel, I think we have a bigger responsibility for sure, and I'll probably try to take that lead with those businesses. Now I do worry about that, because if they don't step up as well, you know, and pay their fair share, we just wouldn't be able to afford it and be able to do all the things I have to do for my people, you know. So I'm hoping that we come together as a community and help those exits. But yeah, I do feel it's on my radar for sure. And what was the second question?
Yeah, I can't remember the second one. It's hard when you ask a couple of questions, right. But I'll write them down.
Yeah, hopefully I'll try to remember that.
Yeah, or call back in and ask the
second question. Exit. So I was working at Mendocino College, and Arturo Reyes was the former president, good friend of mine, and he was working at that time to bring a MTA stop to our gas station, and we wanted to have that there too, because we think it's important. Where the stop is now is so inconvenient, because it's just right off a major road, you know. If we could get it more inland off of a street, then I think it would be better for everybody, and also our employees, you know, if they need to do busing. But also for our children going to the college, you know, transportation is important.
Right. It's not exactly a hop, skip, and a jump to get to the college. It's kind of a haul. We need that bus service to the college. Talking about development and tribal responsibility for off-ramps and traffic and that kind of stuff, I know that you're also mindful of the fact that we're in a climate crisis and that there are a lot of environmental concerns, too, that the tribes are very concerned about. So how do you think about that when you're, you know, you have a gas station and you're developing a hotel and a lot of transportation coming through there? How is the tribe thinking about climate and planning for climate?
Whew, man, that's a tough one. Mm. I struggle with that one, because I am anti big oil. I'm, you know, my mother's a activist and, you know, liberal activist, and that's probably how we met, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so, man, that's such a tough one, because first and foremost, I have to build the infrastructure and economic development engine for my reservation first and foremost. Now we took a lot of extra steps that we didn't need to when we built our fuel station. Now, am I an expert on that? No, but I know we did a lot of extra things we didn't have to do. That's a tough one, you know. And we're bringing solar into our reservation and trying to reusable water, you know, from our gray area water or gray water. It's tough. All I could do is just try to be as responsible I can for what I'm doing right now on my reservation. And as far as thinking outside that particular box, man, I think that has to be a county initiative, you know. And I believe in the grassroots initiatives, you know. I think those are fun, you know. I mean, you need to have the state, which is taking the lead obviously already, but I think we have to do our own. But I think those are the kind of things that counties organize. And we sit at that table, you know, and they should ask us to sit at that table. Right. But I think those are the things that they have to take the lead on, because it can't just be us limiting our growth because we have this, you know, thing in our heart that we want to make sure that we're, you know, fighting that battle too. But that's a mixed one for me. It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's
balancing really tough. It's considerations of taking care of just housing and living needs for the people that you serve versus the larger, the future of the planet.
And right. Right, you know, and we put our own ordinances in place to where all new homes must meet a certain requirement of, you know, the energy efficient, and we have auditors come out to make sure we're energy efficient, we have all solar, so we're doing all those kind of things to make sure that we don't add to the problem, you know, but I think as a county, it'd be fun to get together. I don't know if they could take a lead like that, I'm not sure.
Well, we did work, and your mom was part of this, Priscilla Hunter was part of this effort to create the county's climate action committee or climate advisory committee for the county, and written into those protocols with that committee was that the tribes are part of the decision making about any of the proposals that come from the committee to the county.
Yeah, she's the chairwoman of the Intertribal Thinking On Project, and they take a large role, you know, a huge role. They saved a lot of the forest, thousands and thousands of acres, and they actually manage it. She doesn't get the credit for that. She created that organization along with many others, but she was the chair for many years and still is. And she doesn't get the credit for that. I don't think 100 people understand how many acres she literally went out and raised monies for to buy just to not be cut, you know.
And
she's a local hero.
Still taking care of.
Yeah,
yes,
she's a local hero. And unfortunately, many don't know how much of a local hero she is. Yeah, really. And then I get to be on the radio station, or I'm in the newspaper or whatever, you know, and she probably looks at me saying, this guy.
We have another caller. Hey, caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, I just want to commend you for doing energy-efficient homes, and that folks in the county that are rebuilding could take a page from that book and try to and apply that, you know, in their situations. And I just want to say I'm really thrilled to hear this program in general. I didn't know anything about the tribal government, and I'm really happy to hear about it, and especially about the initiatives you're taking. And we'll keep buying your gas when we don't drive our electric car.
Lovely.
When we drive our gas cars, we stop at your gas station. So thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate you. You know, people don't understand that we're just not a fuel station that, you know, that the dollars just go to one family or a few families. We're really, you know, it's a full reservation. It's a full community, you know, and it's not, it goes to programs. You know, our economic development goes to that. Right now, I got to give a shout out to my people, you know, our membership. They decided and invest in their future to not take any more dollars. They get like $300 a month from all the economic development we do, you know. And they decided amongst themselves, you know, and with my leadership and our council's leadership, that we will not take another dollar until we are self-reliant. We do all these things we say we're going to do. And we had the vision, and we executed it. So they trust us, and it took a long time to build that trust. But it was a shared vision, for sure.
So all of the money from the gas station and the casino goes to the tribe as a collective?
Yeah, right. And then it's dispersed in a general fund, and then you decide what programs you're going to run, this and that. But right now, all of ours is to build infrastructure, you know, so we decided that we're going to build an economic development in our future first.
Uh-huh. And do you also have educational programs for the kids on the tribe?
Yeah, we actually, you know, like I was saying, Arturo Reyes, he was the former president of Mendo, good friend of mine, and we actually brought Pomo Pathways, we call it, and to our reservation. And I wanted to go back to college because, my daughter and Michaela, we were doing something with Congressman Huffman, I don't remember, it was for the United Pomo Nations Council, and he was there, and he asked if any wanted to speak, and the younger generation, she says, I will. And she says, well, I'm the first to go to college and finish college. And I was like, whoa, kid, man, not everybody knows I didn't finish, you know? Called me out, man. And I was like, well, first of all, your grandmother was the first, you know, and your auntie was the second, but I'll let you get your, you know, you could stand up here and be proud. So it was a cool moment, but it was also eye-opening. And I went to a graduation where my cousin Viva, she graduated in math. Man, like, she's like a genius, right, at Sonoma State. And I was sitting there going, how, as a tribal leader, am I supposed to preach education but also put a vision together for education if I don't even know the process? So I went back into it. It's my last semester at Sonoma State. And during that process, I realized that my fear was math, speech, and English. And I says, you know, and I went to the president. The president came to me as well. And we talked, and we said, let's bring it to the reservation. Let's get this process going to where I could get Native Americans outside my reservation, just not just Coyote Valley, but coming to our place. So we have a state-of-the-art computer lab. They come there. They're in session right now. And they come there. It's Monday through Thursday, I believe, and they take all these courses. And but it's not just the courses that they're taking, it's the comfort level to get to know the teachers, but to get to know the timelines on when you have to meet with counselors, when you have to, you know, add your classes, when you have to do things so they become part of the system. That was one of our proudest moments for sure, you know. That was when I had to go learn myself to come back and say, what was my fears? And, you know, and try to see if I could limit those fears for them. And shoot, man, we have a full class. Like, they're strong. We have full class every semester. It's, I think we're in our third or fourth year. Yeah.
And it's a Mendocino College program out at Coyote Valley,
yeah.
And it's free to the people who participate in
right.
it.
Right, and books. And what we did, too, is we help. You know, we help finances, but so does Mendo. And so we provide food, and we provide daycare, and we provide food for the kids too, obviously, right? And then we pay for their books, the backpacks, all those things. So all I have to do is come and attend, you know, and they do. And I think the last statistic we got, we were the highest rate of success. We're like at 80% or something crazy, and we're like, whoa. So sometimes he's the president of Rio Hondo now, and he's always trying to recoup me to come help there, you know, not to go work for him, but to come help and, you know, build those relationships.
We have another call. Hey, caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, thank you very much. I very much appreciate the show and your guest. I haven't been able to hear all of this, and I don't know if anybody else has brought this up, but there's a long overdue apology to you, your people, your fellow tribal nations, and everything from the absolutely abominable treatment that you've been given by white people. So for myself personally, I'm offering a very deep and heartfelt apology for the awful things that have been done to you and the obstacles that have been put in your way. And I am amazingly impressed with your resiliency and sticking to the principles that you folks have always stood by. And this is a personal apology and a message of appreciation for your resilience and your persistence and your just cooperation. It's just astounding to me. So many people who feel they've been wronged don't find it in their hearts to forgive or forget or anything else, and you folks have just stayed with it. So that's really about all I have to say, except for my admiration for what you're doing for you and your people. And I only wish white folk could emulate the solidarity that you folks demonstrate.
Yeah, thank you. Much appreciated. You know, the governor just recently in the last 3 months put out an official statement on exactly what you're talking about. And so that's key. And it's not only key for just the apology, right, from the governor. It's the key because it actually opens up doors for us to be able to go and be treated like a government and a community within California, to where we can actually say, hey, we want to build a community park too. You know, can we access these dollars? You know, things like that. So sometimes the apology is really heartfelt, and I really feel good about that because it helps you keep going forward, right? And it helps amend some of the pain that I go through when I have to deal with the non-Indian community. But it also has a bigger effect statewide. So I think it's important. The more the more tribes do to win over our communities, the better off we are as well. So it's a win-win for sure.
All right. Well, with that, we've come to the end of the hour, and I want to thank you. This is Alicia Bales. I want to thank you very much, Michael Hunter, for coming in and talking with us for the hour. Thanks for all of the callers who called in. Thanks for Rich Culbertson for engineering. Next week at this time on October 2nd, Joy LeClaire and Forthright Radio return with an interview with Tom Hartman about his newest book, The Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America and Guns and the Second Amendment. This is KZYX 90.7 FM, Philo, KZYZ, Willetton, Ukiah, 91.5 FM, and Fort Bragg at 88.1 FM. Altogether, we are Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio. Again, thank you very much for coming in. It was a wonderful conversation. And stay tuned now for Fresh Air with Terry Gross, followed by Mendo Blendo with Christina G at 1 and the Sports Phone with Jim and Jerry live in the studio for your calls at 3 o'clock. Thanks for listening.